Good night, America. It's time for your news by the numbers. Tonight's number is 450. More than 450 people in Florida have been ordered to surrender their guns since March. The handover began after the state law went into effect that let judges revoke weapons from people deemed a threat to themselves or to others. Under the law passed in the wake of the Parkland shooting, the state can file a risk protection petition against irresponsible gun owners in court. According to the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office, the majority of the risk prevention cases involved people with histories of mental illness who have threatened to hurt themselves. The measure signed by Florida Governor Rick Scott on March 9th additionally raised the minimum age of buying a rifle in Florida from 18 to 21 and established a waiting period and background checks for gun buyers. Now let's get into this. Florida has been one of those states where it is literally, my brother says it best, it's called the gunshine state, where it's easy to get a weapon. Huffington Post a couple years ago did a study in Florida where they found it took one of their journalists 38 minutes to buy an AR-15, an assault weapon grade rifle. But sadly, because of Parkland, even Republicans have realized that the ideal of having guns fast and loose everywhere isn't the way to go. And here's what's interesting about this particular report is that since March 9th, that's less than 6 months ago, people, right? They have confiscated over 450 weapons. 450 folks in Florida should not have had access to a gun that we know of. And I guarantee you that number is a lot bigger than just that 450. And as we sit here and reminisce on where we are as a society, I mean, there's a new documentary came out this week about Trayvon Martin and his untimely death at the hands of George Zimmerman. And just think about it. George Zimmerman, prior to shooting Trayvon Martin, America, was already under law enforcement watch for domestically abusing his girlfriend. But he was still allowed to have a weapon. If this law was in place prior to the day that Trayvon Martin decided that he wanted to go to 7-Eleven to buy Skittles and an iced tea, maybe, just maybe, George Zimmerman would have not been allowed to have a gun after beating his girlfriend to the point of no return. America, I am not anti-Second Amendment. Neither are most Democrats. All we're asking for is common sense rules of the road. And what Governor Rick Scott did, and I am not a fan of Rick Scott by any stretch or means of the imagination, but what Governor Rick Scott did in the state of Florida after the death of those 19 innocent individuals at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, in Broward County, was he had swift action. Now, don't get me wrong. This wasn't voluntary swift action. It required people going to the Capitol and protest. It required the students and victims of Parkland saying, we have had enough. We are not safe in our public schools. And because of that, Republicans finally decided to do something because they do manage all the chambers in the Florida State Legislature. So, the point I'm making here is this. Why must it take so long to get laws like these passed, even though we know these laws are effective? 450 people shouldn't have had access to a gun, and those guns have been taken away, 450 people. Now, one of the sergeants of Pinellas County told ABC News that area offices have taken away about 200 firearms and around 30,000 rounds of ammunition since the law went into effect. Around a quarter of the 467 risk protection cases filed in Florida since March involved concealed license firearm holders whose license temporarily are suspended once the order was granted. And according to this report that we're talking about here, that emerged in the aftermath of Stoneman Douglas, which left 17 dead, the accused shooter engaged in threatening and troubling behavior way before they engage in the actual act of killing those innocent students. Very similar to the Trayvon Martin case, where George Zimmerman was already engaging in threatening and troubling behavior, but yet still was allowed to carry his weapon. Now, these laws are great, America, but these laws just don't go far enough. Because in Florida, you still have the Stand Your Ground law, which basically says anytime you feel threatened, you're allowed to relinquish, you're allowed to shoot your firearm at whoever makes you feel threatened. That's how George Zimmerman was able to walk away from killing Trayvon Martin. Like I said at the beginning of this segment, I'm not against the Second Amendment. Both my father and brother are gun owners. All I'm asking for, and all Democrats are asking for, are some common sense rules of the road. How do we make a situation where there is a reasonable America? We're asking for reasonability. A reasonable standard that says, you should have a gun and you should not have a gun. Every amendment in our Constitution has its limits. And the Second Amendment deserves those limits as well. Bravo to Rick Scott, and bravo, more importantly, to the students and their families who became vocal anti-gun activists after the shooting in Parkland. We'll be right back after this break.
Fight to win, stand up straight, no debate, push by hate, concentrate, penetrate, generate, motivate, live by faith, keep believing. I know the reason, it's the season, now's the time. Keep on dreaming, keep on leading, and keep on fighting. I am fighting for the liberation of voices with something to say, like many before me. For glory, you'll have to stand in harm's way. I'm no savior, just a soldier. Soldier with an order, so I have no choice but to trust the gun, cause it must be done. Yeah. And my only fear is what might happen if I didn't fight to win. If I lose, then this was worth dying for. If I
Good night, America. Welcome to the Fowler Show. As always, here on the Fowler Show, we're here to inform you, to empower you, and help you get your voice back. Tonight's show's no different. We have all your favorite segments, and you have me. Yes, indeed, America, it's true. So let's cut the crap and let's get right to the news. As candidate Trump promised to open up new markets to trade, rein in regulatory overreach, and cut government spending to enable rural America to compete in the global economy. While the economy has seen some gains under President Trump, and he should be praised for it, when it comes to agriculture, we are headed towards an economic disaster. Yes, indeed, America, it is true. In Illinois, the number one soybean producing state, grain farmers have lost 20 to 25% of the value of their crop since March, when President Trump unexpectedly announced $60 billion in tariffs on Chinese imports. China, which buys the bulk of U.S. soybean exports, responded in April with a 25% tariff on U.S. soybeans, while Trump followed up in May with more tariffs, this time on trading partners like Canada and Mexico. Soybean farmers watch as the value of their crops plummeted like an anvil. Yes, indeed, America, it's true. Farmers are suffering because of President Trump's unnecessary, overburdensome trade war. Now, let me begin here. A couple weeks ago on the Fowler Show, I talked about why I thought President Trump implementing strategic tariffs, or the threat of strategic tariffs against China, was a good idea. And I still stand by that. I don't plan on moving. Here's where President Trump went wrong. For decades, the Chinese government has been dumping steel and aluminum onto the global market, hurting both workers in the United States, Canada, Mexico, and Europe. China is a bad actor when it comes to this. They're a very bad actor. The whole world knows it. They've been to the WTO many times, but China seems to be unmovable. So, when President Trump came out and said it's time for us to protect aluminum and steel workers in the United States, I praised the president. But I also thought the president would have a better understanding of our tariff policy in this country and globally, and what tariff policy and tariff theory says overall. Now, here's how we should have done this. We should have worked with our allies, Canada, Mexico, the European Union, and the United States. And we should have come together and we should have imposed universally across the board a strategic tariff against Chinese steel and aluminum. Here's what that would have done. That would have basically said to China that not only is the world watching as you illegally dump steel onto the market, but beyond that, the world is ready to act. The developed world is saying no. China would have immediately corrected its behavior, not because of the United States, but because there are so many trading partners that China needs for its economy to continue to grow, including Europe, Mexico, and Canada. But instead, under President Trump's twisted ideology of America First, he decided to go it alone. And in going it alone, he opened up America to what we are now in, a trade war of epic proportion. And the people that are suffering are the least of these. And they're also Trump voters. You see, the farm community all across this country continues to suffer, and they're not alone. As foreign automakers brace themselves for what could be another tariff against luxury cars being exported out of the United States. Beyond just foreign automakers, there's more companies that are being hurt by this trade war. Just take the case of Harley-Davidson, an American staple who has decided to relocate its manufacturing plant to Asia, where its emerging market is. And the answer? Why produce in America and subject ourselves to a 20% tariff when we could produce in Asia and sans the tariff altogether? Here's what President Trump never realized. When you impose a tariff unilaterally against a country where you where they're one of your number one trading partners, or then your top five trading partners, they have the ability to respond. And President Xi did just that. And beyond that, the president also failed to realize that China is a communist country with a central bank. So the Chinese government, in all likelihood, is absorbing many of these tariffs, and the industry titans are allowed to continue to do their job while the Chinese government takes care of the tariff. Here in the United States, that's not the case. Even though thousands of farmers converged on Capitol Hill begging Washington for a bailout, Washington's response was pretty much what we thought it would be. No. Because Washington only really cares about bailing out big banks and those who collect big bonuses. But when it comes to America's farmers, they could give a crap less. Now, before I go off on a deep end, let's remember that there are good Republicans and Democrats who spoke out against President Trump's unilateral trade war. They just happened to lose the battle. Now, just take a look here of corn and soybean prices plummeting following Trump's tariff announcement. You could literally see the slope, the stark slope difference from when he announced from right before he announced the tariff to when he announced the tariff. Look at these prices. You're talking about big money here. Big money, and here's the thing, this is gonna affect the American worker. You might not see it today, it might not show up in tomorrow's job report, but you give it a couple months and you'll start to see our farm industry hurt bigly, as the president would say. And here's what one farmer said. You actually lose every day, is what a fifth generation farmer from Illinois said. You're still paying to go to work back and forth and make and buy lunch, but you're losing money. Who would want to keep doing that, you know? For some context on the severity of the situation, this particular farmer, her name is Krista Swanson from Illinois, said in March that the average central Illinois grain farmer expected a net income of about $35,000 this year. Those farmers now are substantially in the negative. Yet, asked if she was angry at President Trump for starting a trade war, potentially driving her family farm into the ground, Swanson wouldn't blame him for anything. She compared it to farmers dealing with the challenges like droughts or pests. We're just hoping this doesn't last for a long time, and that we can get to a point where we end up in a better place. Here's the thing, Ms. Swanson. This trade war doesn't seem to have an end in sight. The president says we have to stick it out for the long haul to rebalance the playing field. Herein lies my fear, Ms. Swanson. My fear is that China might not be willing to balance the playing field so easily. Maybe they will hold our feet to the fire in a way that will dramatically hurt farmers, dramatically hurt auto workers, and dramatically hurt working families all across this country. Because the Chinese have nothing to lose. They're one of the fastest growing economies in the world. And beyond just that, they have more people and they have the ability to absorb many of the tariffs coming their direction because their central government and their central bank. So Ms. Swanson, I don't know if this is gonna be a short-term fix. This seems like we might be in this trade war hunkered down for the long term. And with no end in sight, I think the price of corn and soybeans will continue to plummet. And as these prices continue to plummet, farm workers and farmers all across this country will continue to feel the pain of the Trump economy. So while Wall Street and corporations continue to benefit off Trump's generous tax cuts, American farmers and American working families, they're starting to get the aftermath. America, buckle up your seatbelts and brace yourself. We are only 2 years in. And like I said at the beginning of this whole thing, I actually agreed with the president on starting this strategic tariff. Where we are now, we're in no man's land. And hopefully, Mr. Art of the Deal can deal our way out of it. Listen, I need you to do me a favor. If you're listening to this on the radio, go ahead and go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Fowler Show, and hit that subscribe button below to join this movement as we continue to inform, empower, and help folks get their voice back. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go anywhere.
Hello, world. It's your boy, Richard. Every night when I get home, I find myself quite thirsty. Thirsty for an adult beverage, and that is why I prefer a tall glass of organic wine from the Organic Wine Company. Founded in 1972, the Organic Wine Company is the nation's oldest importer of organically produced wines. They have a tremendous selection, red, white, sparkling, and dessert wines, and it's oh so tasty. It's easy and inexpensive to ship right to your door. For a limited time, you can get an even bigger savings by visiting ecowines.com and using the coupon code FowlerShow. Join the movement. Movement of good-tasting, earth-friendly wine drinkers, led by the fine folks at the Organic Wine Company. You can find them online at ecowines.com or give them a call, 1-888-ecowines.com. And don't forget to use that coupon code, FowlerShow, for your extra special discount. This is our movement, and more importantly, this is our community. Do you feel like your community is being left behind? Has your elected official neglected their constituents? It's time to get your voice back. It's time for your community to rise up. We want you to take a picture of what's wrong in your community and send it to photo@FowlerShow.com or tweet it to us at FowlerShow. We want to help you advocate for yourself. We want to help you get your voice back. Your pictures will be featured on our blog. We might even take your issue up on our show. We are committed to your community. Now it's time for you to be committed as well. Go ahead, send the picture to photo@FowlerShow.com or tweet it to us at FowlerShow. Remember, it's time for you to get informed, empowered, and get your voice back. Our community, our movement. Only on The Richard Fowler Show.
I'm a third grade teacher.
I'm a school bus driver.
I am a parent.
I am a teacher's aide. And I agree to be identified
as a caring adult who pledges to help bullied students.
I will listen carefully to all students who seek my help
and act on their behalf
to put an immediate stop to bullying.
I will work with other caring adults to create a safe
learning environment for all the students in my school.
In my school.
In my school.
In my school.
I'm Dennis Van Roekel, president of the National Education Association. Help us create safe, bully-free learning environments for all students. One caring adult can make all the difference. Be that adult and take the pledge at nea.org/bullyfree. adults have the power to stop bullying in our schools.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
Bully free. It starts with me.
Visit nea.org/bullyfree. A message from the National Education Association.
My name is Joe Thompson. I'm 29 years old and I have a career that I love as a systems analyst. Career. It still sounds cool to say that word. I never could have gotten on this path without a college degree. And if the college me were here, he'd tell you.
I never would have gotten to college without big brothers, big sisters. I could have ended up anywhere, on the streets even. But college? Joe Thompson? Not likely. My big brother helped me out. He taught me I could do anything. At a time when a lot of people were saying just the opposite.
And to a 7-year-old, that means a lot. My big brother's name is Phil. And Phil is the reason that this 7-year-old grows up to be a systems analyst.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child. And that can last a lifetime. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
The Richard Fowler Show is completely and totally interactive, so go ahead, give us a call, 202-573-8737, or tweet us at Fowler Show. Remember, this movement is nothing without you, so pick up that phone.
And we're back on the Fowler Show, and it's time for your political maniacs. This past Friday, President Trump lashed out at basketball star LeBron James in a scathing attack on Twitter after James criticized the president in an interview on CNN. In a wide-ranging interview with Don Lemon, James spoke about a new school for at-risk children that he helped open in Akron, Ohio. During the interview, James claimed that President Trump was using sports to divide the country. Following the interview, President Trump took to Twitter to insult James and Lemon's intelligence. The president has often praised his own IQ and has questioned the intelligence of others, including John Stewart, George W. Bush, and others. And his tweet about Mr. James and Mr. Lemon came days after he declared at a campaign rally that Representative Maxine Waters of California had a very low IQ. So this week's political maniac, as you can imagine, is our fearless leader, Donald J. Trump. Let's take a listen to, before we get there, let's take a listen to Don Lemon responding to President Trump's tweet. And here's what President Trump said, so you have some context. LeBron James was just interviewed by the dumbest man on television, Don Lemon. He made LeBron look smart, which isn't easy to do. I like Mike. Now let's listen to LeBron. Let's listen to Don Lemon and respond to President Trump on his show.
Let me not mince words here. This president traffics in racism and is fueled by bullying. From keeping children at the border in cages to bullying journalists at every one of his rallies and every chance he gets. President Trump is trying to divide and a divide and conquer strategy here, and here's how it goes. He divides by race and tries to conquer decency by smearing and besmirching the truth and the people who fight to uphold it.
Now, so that is that sets it up for you, right? So now if you were unclear, the Mike he's talking about is Michael Jordan. And Michael Jordan responded, from Michael Jordan's office released the following statement. I support LeBron. He's doing an amazing job in his community. Now, Don Lemon also took to Twitter to attack the president beyond doing it on his show. And here's what he said in response to President Trump's tweet. Who's the real dummy? A man who puts children in kids in classrooms or a man who puts kids in cages? He added hashtag be best, a reference to an initiative by First Lady Melania Trump aimed to help children and stop cyberbullying. America, the shade is real. And it is hot outside. Hell, it's hot in the damn kitchen. Now, before I go into this ridiculous debate created by the President of the United States, let's first applaud LeBron James for doing something pretty extraordinary. LeBron could have taken the course of many in his field, millionaires and opened up a charter school that was unaccountable and untransparent to the American people and to the Akron, Ohio residents. But instead, LeBron approached the Akron public school system and said, hey, what do you guys need? What are your deficiencies? And they said, here's what we think we need for a school to work perfectly. And LeBron said, cool, you build a school, and I will give you money to fund all the wraparound services. And when I mean wraparound services, these services are wrapped like a Christmas present with a big bow. Excuse me. They include everything from free college, to extra counselors, to everything a kid needs to make him be successful in school. But the I Promise School, folks, should not be an outlier. Every American public school should look like I Promise. Why? Because our greatest resource as Americans is our people. And if we want to quote unquote keep America great, as the president's new motto is for his 2020 campaign, then it starts by investing in our future and making sure that public education works for everybody and not just a chosen few. Here's the reality today. The reality today is, depending upon the color of your skin, your zip code, your sexual orientation, or your citizenship status, your educational opportunities can be limited. Don't take my word for it. Just visit any city, any of our city's inner cities, and you will see what I'm talking about. Take Chicago, for example. On the north side of Chicago, for some reason, the public schools there just work perfectly. They have all the wraparound services, they have the best facilities, they have the best buildings. It all works for Chicago public schools in the north part of the city. And then you go to the southern part of the city, the south side of Chicago. And on the south side of Chicago, in the same school district, in the same city, with the same tax revenue, all of a sudden the schools stop working. But Chicago isn't alone. Take right here where we taped this show in our nation's capital. Right here in Washington, D.C., in Ward 3, which is the richest ward in this city, those public schools work perfectly. No problems. You have high quality teachers, you have school nurses, you got school counselors, you have wraparound services. These schools are quote unquote high achieving. And if you travel just 15 or 20 minutes out of Ward 3 and you go to Ward 8, the poorest ward in this city, you find out for all of a sudden public education stops working. LeBron saw this problem, like many of us do, and he said, we need to fix this. And how we fix this is by giving the most vulnerable, the most at risk, the most resources. And so the kids that come out of I Promise, oh, they're going to be brilliant. They're going to be bright. And they're going to be example of what can be done when public schools work. Sadly, Betsy DeVos, our Secretary of Education, missed that memo. But that was a total diatribe from President Trump's tweets. So instead of the president praising LeBron James for doing something amazing for his community, for quote unquote trying to make Akron great, the president took to Twitter to slam LeBron James. And if you ask the president and his people, he would say, oh, well, LeBron attacked him first. Well, Mr. President, you are the president of the United States. You're the leader of the free world. And Michelle Obama said it best. When you work and you live in the White House, your job is when they go high, when they go low, we go high. But for President Trump, when they go low, he goes to the gutter. Hell, he goes to the bottom of the swamp. And so in attacking LeBron James, this president once again fueled the flames of hate and fueled the flames of animosity that exist between him and the African American citizens that live in this country. Because an attack on LeBron James to many African Americans is an attack on them. And an attack also on the football players who use their platform to raise consciousness around police brutality and the injustices happening all across this nation. Mr. President, it's time for you to take a page out of your own book. Some of the best negotiators in the world will tell you this. One of the critical skills in negotiating is being a good listener. And Mr. President, as my mother would say, it seems like you have taken sticks and you put them in their ears and you have refused to listen to the cries of sports athletes and folks saying that your rhetoric doesn't seem to bring America together. You can't blame the fake news media for the fact that you're dividing this country. And your attack on LeBron James and Don Lemon speak to that. We'll be right back after this break. So Véronique, thank you all for joining us today. So tell me, what is the Organic Wine Company?
The Organic Wine Company is something I founded out of the depths of my heart some 30 years ago, if you can believe it, because of my passion for the earth, my passion for my terroir, the land of my ancestors.
Now tell me, how is organic wine made differently than regular wine?
Generally speaking, an organic wine has to be made with grapes that are grown organically. An organic tomato is a tomato that's grown without pesticides, herbicides, or any kind of chemical fertilizers and such. And so grapes grown organically are grown that way as well, without those chemicals. Conventional wines, on the other hand, may be grown with all sorts of pesticides and herbicides and other chemical adjuvants. And then once in the cellar, may be made with all sorts of other chemicals. I'm excited to be following in the footsteps of Tom Hartmann and doing something before it's too late, giving people a wonderful wine to celebrate with, to celebrate their life and their friends and our planet in a way that is completely sort of congruent. Then I have wines that represent that code of honor in a bottle. You can call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. And look for us at www.theorganicwinecompany.com. Better even, you should call me, Véronique, and talk to me and get to know those wines personally. And we carry about 100 by now, a whole range of from Merlot to Cabernets to Chardonnays to all sorts of things from different countries and also from California.
Breast health awareness is critical for all women, particularly African Americans, because we have an increased risk of dying from breast cancer compared to women of other backgrounds. At U of M, I'm doing research here and with women in Ghana to look for an inherited link that makes African and African American women susceptible to a more aggressive type of cancer. Finding this link, I believe, will make new treatments possible. But right now, making sure that you are properly screened is our best protection.
With experts like Dr. Lisa Newman, the University of Michigan Health System is a leader in cancer care. When you call our free Cancer Answer line at 800-865-1125, an oncology nurse will answer any questions you might have about the prevention, screening, and treatment of breast cancer and other forms of cancer. All calls are confidential. Call 800-865-1125 or visit uofmhealth.org/cancer-answer-line.
We're working to help everyone enjoy longer, healthier lives.
That's the Michigan difference.
Say you want to go to college.
Yay!
A Big Ten college.
Yeah!
But you don't want to feel like part of the, well, you know. Is there an answer for you? Of course. Indiana University East.
Go Rebels!
Indiana University East. You'll get the quality of a Big Ten education in a small college setting. IU East offers more than 50 fields of study, from accounting to political science, taught by internationally recognized faculty with an average of 18 students per class. So it's not student number 95A-6273, please report to... It's more like, hey, John, welcome to class. Best of all, you'll graduate with one of the most respected degrees anywhere, a degree from IU. Don't wait. Go to iue.edu... or call 800-959-EAST to arrange a visit to Indiana University East. IU. Focused on you.
The Richard Fowler Show is completely and totally interactive, so go ahead, give us a call, 202-573-8737, or tweet us at Fowler Show. Remember, this movement is nothing without you, so pick up that phone.
We'll be right back.
There was an election this Tuesday, and that's what your Washington Whisperer is about. All across this country, in many states, Ohio, Missouri, Washington State, Michigan, voters went to the polls to elect primary candidates that will represent them in the general election. There was also a special congressional race in the Ohio 12th District. Let's start there. So in the Ohio 12th District is parts of Columbus, Ohio, the suburbs of Columbus, Ohio. This is a ruby red district. This is as red as the blood in my body. If I were to cut my hand and the red were to spew out, that would be this district. This is what we would call in politics an R+7, meaning it's a Republican leaning district plus 7 points. Meaning on a bad day, on a very bad day, Republicans should win this seat by 57% or more. That's not the case. Now, we're still waiting for votes to be counted because absentee ballots and provisional ballots will not be counted until August 25th. But here's what we know. In a race that Republicans should have won outright, Democrats not only showed up, but they showed out. And now the race is tied. A virtual tie. There's 1,000 votes between the two, Republican and the Democrat, in this race. A race that Democrats should not have even been competitive in. And now Republicans are making the argument, oh, well, President Trump went, and that's why we're winning. So that means President Trump gave you, what, 1%? President Trump gave you the extra 1,000 votes you needed? If the president had not shown up to the district, in all likelihood, Democrats would have won that thing outright. But the president showing up basically was a stopgap measure. Here's what else you need to know about the Ohio 12th District. Republicans outspent Democrats 5-1, but it didn't stop the Democratic momentum going into Election Day. Now, a win is a win, and if Republicans pull this off, bravo to them, and congratulations on winning a special election seat that you should have won from the beginning. It's like congratulating Usain Bolt for winning a gold medal at the Olympics when you already know he's the fastest man in the world. Congratulations on winning. But it speaks to a larger problem that Republicans have as we are just 90 days away from this country's midterm elections. Republicans have a Trump problem. And the Trump problem rears its ugly head, not in rural America, but in suburban America. In the suburbs, Trump needs to convince educated white women and educated white men that he's the right candidate. But all the polls point to the contrary. Poll after poll after poll shows that the president's approval rating amongst these educated groups of voters is at an all-time low. The only group of voters that the president has seemed to maintain a above water approval rating with is uneducated or non-college grad white men. See something? You see what I'm saying here? So he's appealing to his base, but this base is very small. What also happened on this past Tuesday is in Missouri. Let me take you to the state of Missouri. Now, Missouri is a very interesting place for many reasons. First, Missouri is a place that suffers from divided government. It's a Midwestern state that once benefited off industry that has lost many of those industries because of the Great Recession. And it's a place that once was a labor state has now been decimated. So Republicans in the state legislature, in their wise wisdom, decided they would pass a right to work law. Now, for those who don't know what right to work is, right to work basically means you can't join a union without a lot of hoops and hurdles. So they passed it, and they didn't think that people will notice, but it was quite the opposite. So Missouri on the books has a law that indicates if you can get 10,000 registered voters in Missouri to sign a petition, any law passed by the state legislature can be taken to a referendum by the people. And that's exactly what happened when it comes to right to work. So 10,000 brave Missouri citizens signed a petition taking right to work to a referendum. And then this past Tuesday, voters all across the state voted to repeal the right to work law, making the state of Missouri a collective bargaining state. Here's why this matters. Missouri is critical for the balance of the United States Senate because Claire McCaskill's in a tough race for her re-election. But the fact that progressives and Democrats and independents came out and voted to reinstate collective bargaining in the state of Missouri says to me that not only are the voters in Missouri engaged and active, but they're ready. They're ready to vote, not only vote in this primary, but to also vote in November and to re-elect Claire McCaskill. What also took place in the state of Missouri happened in St. Louis County. Now, St. Louis County, America, Google it. It is a situation. It is a municipal, there's no other way to put it. But is why you had the case of Michael Brown and escalating tensions in Ferguson, Missouri. Because of the state attorney, Bob McCullough, who was unwilling to indict the officer, Daryl Wilson, in the case. Officer Wilson. The name is escaping me. I don't know why that's happening on today's show. But you guys know who I'm talking about. The officer who murdered Michael Brown. In the county of St. Louis, voters overwhelmingly, after re-electing him many times, gave Bob the boot. With a hashtag, bye Bob, voters let him go. And in return, in exchange for, a new city council member from Ferguson, Missouri, so now an African American, will sit as the state's attorney for the county of St. Louis. That's just some of the big things to talk about from this past Tuesday. The other one happened in Washington State. In Washington State, GOP leadership, Representative Rogers, now she's a Republican dynamo. She runs the conference. Kathy Rogers, now all the names are escaping me, America. You see what happens when I'm talking to y'all on camera? I start losing people's names. Kathy McMorris Rogers. She was up for her re-election. In Missouri, in Washington State, in their primary, they run a jungle primary, which means the top two candidates, they go on to the general election. This is a very Republican district. She's in House leadership. She won her primary by 1%. Not 2, not 3, not 4, 1%. Which brings us to why this election matters. So what Republicans are trying to do is they're trying to basically set up these straw men. And they're trying to say that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's a Democratic Socialist from the 3rd District of New York, who just won her primary, and Bernie Sanders are the leaders of the Democratic Party. And they're the ones pushing the party forward. People have positioned these two individuals as the leaders of the Democratic Party, because they want the world to believe that the Democratic Party were all socialist. But that's far from the truth. These two individuals represent two out of 535 legislatures if Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wins her election. Here's why this election matters, because they say Democrats don't have a message, so hell, I'm going to give you a message. Couple reasons. Right now, there's a Supreme Court justice pending, Judge Kavanaugh, who, if appointed by the Senate, would be the ninth member of our Supreme Court, functionally bruising and harpooning a woman's rights. Now, let me say this. For America's entire history, a good chunk of that, women have been seen as inferior to men. You can start when the Founding Fathers wrote We the People. We the People only meant white men, white male landowners. It didn't mean African Americans, it didn't mean Latinos, and it definitely didn't mean women. But since that time, every time our courts have acted, every time people have raised their voices, it's been to expand rights and expand representation and create equal protection under the law for African Americans, for LGBTQ folks, and especially for women, especially in the 70s. But up until 1996, we were still fighting for equal protection under the law. We are still fighting for it under Lilly Ledbetter, and that is an electoral issue. That's why this election matters. That's just one reason.
Now all I know is what I read on the internet. Today's headline, pot legal in 14 states for pain. Now that takes a smoke break to a whole new level. Now some companies might see this as a problem, and some, well, they might consider it as an incentive program, depending on the state. As far as I can see, and I'm concerned, it might become a state of confusion. Now I see a few businesses that might have a problem with this new style of pain management. Restaurants, for one. The munchies, you know. They might be eaten out of house and home. Definitely eaten to their bottom line. Corporations, well, they might have a problem in meetings with uncontrollable laughing fits. Of course, the entertainment business will be fine. But for them, it will be business as usual. I don't know about you folks, but I can think of a few jobs I would not want folks smoking marijuana for pain. My doctor, for one. Unless his name is Dr. Feelgood. And I'd like to know that ahead of time. The police. I don't want anyone getting that shoot first, ask questions thing later in their mind. Whatever happened to aspirin? Now, we might just allow some people to smoke out, like Michael Steele. Matter of fact, we might just fund the whole party. No pun intended. For them, it might calm them down a little. After all, what's the worst thing that could happen? They smoke, eat, laugh, and go to sleep. Now that sounds like the Congress if you ask me. Then again, who knows, you might be working with someone right now that's high. I mean, sometimes folks have accused me of being on something. Rest assured, folks, I'm just on a roll. Alright, go to my website, willrogersusa.com.
Stop taking your politics so seriously. Listen to humorist Will Roberts Saturday night, 6 to 7 p.m. on WEAC Radio 1480 AM.
Hello, world. It's your boy, Richard Fowler. Every Friday after I've wrapped up the Richard Fowler Show, I find myself quite thirsty. Thirsty for an adult beverage. Not just any old adult beverage. I prefer a tall glass of one of my favorite fine wines. But not just any old wine either. I obviously demand wine that is super tasty. But I also require the wine I drink be good for the earth and kind to my body. That is why I only buy my wine from The Organic Wine Company. Founded in 1980, The Organic Wine Company is the nation's oldest importer of organic wines. They have a tremendous selection, reds, whites, sparkling, dessert wines, and it's easy and inexpensive to ship them all directly to your front door. Join the movement. The movement of health-conscious, earth-friendly wine drinkers, led by the fine folks at The Organic Wine Company. You can find them online at ecowine.com or give them a call at 1-888-ECO-WINE and tell them your boy Richard Fowler sent you.
I'm Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico. Last year, my state became the 12th state to allow medical use of marijuana by patients who are seriously ill. Some people were surprised that a Republican governor supports medical marijuana, but I'm hardly alone. Groups like the American College of Physicians, American Nurses Association, and American Public Health Association have all acknowledged the medical value of marijuana. New research about medical marijuana is coming out almost every day, showing remarkable potential in all sorts of serious conditions, including cancer, AIDS, and chronic pain. But some in government still want to put politics and ideology ahead of public health. To learn more about medical marijuana and what you can do to help, contact the Marijuana Policy Project at 1-877-JOIN-MPP or visit them on the web at mpp.org. Thanks.
On Friday, federal courts ordered the Trump administration to fully reinstate the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, also known as DACA. But an upcoming hearing could mean the program's future is still in doubt. U.S. District Judge John D. Bates declared the Trump administration's September 2017 decision to end DACA unlawful, reaffirming a previous ruling by the courts in April striking down the Trump administration's actions. Bates, who was appointed by George W. Bush, emphasized the court's ruling does not necessarily mean that the Department of Homeland Security lacks a statutory or constitutional authority to rescind the DACA, but that it must give a rational explanation for its decision. Rational. That's a key word. This presidency lacks a little bit of, like, they just, I don't think they think rationally in that White House sometimes, guys. I really don't. Now, here's what you need to know. The reinstatement won't be immediate. U.S. District Court John Bates said Friday that the order would be delayed until August 23rd to allow the government to appeal. But he denied a Justice Department motion to reconsider his earlier decision, saying that there was still deficiencies in the administration's rationale to rescind DACA. In the 25-page opinion, he specifically criticized a June memo issued by Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen. In the memo, Nielsen said she stood by the legal rationale laid out in the September 5th directive by the then acting Secretary Elaine Duke. Bates said in his ruling that Nielsen's memo, like Duke's before, offered nothing more than remotely approaching a considered legal assessment that this court is subject to judicial review. More than 700,000 young people hang in the balance as we play political football with DACA. Now, DACA, for folks who don't know, if you're living under a rock, was a program created by Barack Obama in the absence of congressional action. So the congressional action that would have solved this problem, or we wouldn't have been in this court case, is the DREAM Act. The DREAM Act was a law that was authored by George W. Bush, co-sponsored by Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer, yet did not ascertain the necessary votes in the George Bush era or the Obama era to make it law, because Republicans refused to budge, because they see DACA as quote-unquote instant amnesty. Now, words matter. So the key word here is instant. Like, you know, instant rice. Instant rice, you put it in your microwave for 20 seconds and voila, you have rice. Or instant approval on a credit card application. You fill out all the information, you put it all in, tink, 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 you press submit, and then they say, congratulations, you've been approved for a brand new American Express. Or they say, we regret to inform you, you were not approved. That's instant. The DACA program and the DREAM Act law did not give instant amnesty. Here's what the DREAM Act and DACA, the executive order, says. It says if you are an illegal immigrant who came to the country between a particular time period, who is either at working, in college, or serving our military, have passed a background check, and have paid the fee, then after all these steps, then the government will consider giving you a deferred action, giving you deferred action on whether or not you get deported. So they would give you a temporary stay in the United States of America. And that temporary stay has to be renewed every 2 years. And every 2 years you have to go through the same process. There's nothing about that that's like instant rice or instant credit card approvals. Background checks take time. Paying the fee takes time. There's tons and tons of loopholes. I mean, not loopholes, there's tons and tons of hurdles that one must cross before you qualify to be a DACA recipient. So this argument that this is some sort of instant amnesty might sound good, but it's not. Instant amnesty is what President Trump likes to call fake news, because it is. It doesn't exist. Instant amnesty would be you show up, they give you instant amnesty. You're automatically allowed to stay here for the foreseeable future. No reapproval, nothing. Instant amnesty. Amnesty means you're allowed to be in the United States freely as a citizen. as a citizen or as a temporary, on a green card, but you're a resident alien here, no problems, you're good to go. That's not what DACA is, for the record. But President Trump ended DACA, even though he said there was so much heart for these kids and he had compassion for these kids and he wanted a bill of love. But he rescinded DACA, creating a political football for these 700,000 young people. Now, what makes this even more heartbreaking are these young people go to school with us. They went to school with me. These young people, they serve our military. They go to our colleges and universities. They contribute to America every single day. Yet we have slapped them in the face by not providing them the protections they deserve. They didn't come to this country yet. No, they came to the country no fault of their own. You can't tell me that a two-year-old can determine criminal intent. A two-year-old can barely walk, much less cross the Rio Grande River. So miss me with this argument that they're illegal and they broke a law. Two-year-olds can't break laws. They don't know better. So miss me with this argument and let's end this debate. And it's time for Congress to grow some balls, some big balls, and do what's right for these 700 kids and stop playing a game of political catch. This is not the Super Bowl. This is not an NFL game. This is not let's throw around the football in the front yard. This is people's lives. And we're playing a delicate dance with Russian roulette, and it's not nice, it's not kind, and it's downright un-American. We are a nation of immigrants. Immigrant blood flows through all of our veins, and to deny that is reprehensible. And to all the people out there who make the argument that, we need to know who's coming into this country. We need to make sure that our country's safe. Let's remember this one thing. The DACA program actually does that, because these young people have to have a background check. They have to pay a fee. They have to either be working in the military or in college. These aren't the ills of our society. These aren't the crevices of America. This is the future of America. America has been and will always be a nation of immigrants, and these young people are the face of America. So let's stop denying them their ability to pursue the American dream, and let's work together to solve the problem and put the partisan bickering aside. People, come on. This should be a simple one. This bill should pass Congress 99-1. It should pass the House of Representatives 135-0. But yet here we are in 2018 in the courts wrangling about what to do about these 700,000 young people. 700,000 young people who want nothing more than to live the American dream. 700,000 young people that probably don't even know their homeland, never been there, don't know how to get there. Yet we are forcefully sending back. Is this the nation that we've become? Is this who we are as Americans? Is this what we the people in the Constitution represents? Is this what our Statue of Liberty says when she says, bring us your poor, bring us your starving, bring us your huddled masses yearning to breathe the air of freedom? If you believe in freedom of liberty, if you believe in freedom and liberty and you're an American patriot, then the DREAM Act should be the right thing to do. It should be the American thing to do. Listen, folks, I want you to join this movement. Go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Fowler Show, or hit me up on Instagram @RichardAFowler. That clock on the wall tells me it's time to go. Remember, I love you, but God loves you way more than I do. Good night from Washington, everybody.